ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः हरिः ॐ ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट् अस् बोत् मे ब्रह्मन् bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. So the important points we are discussing of the teachings of the Vedas. The Vedic rishis or seers had found out four important truths about life. What are these four? At the very beginning of my talks, I had reminded the essence of the Vedas that there is one reality which is called Brahman, and everything is sacred, everything is interconnected, and everything has a meaning. So this discovery starts with the idea of rhythm, and the moment we do not understand this and try to guide or regulate our life, then our life becomes anritha. The popular meaning of the word anritha is untruthfulness, but the real meaning is it is unreal, meaningless, wasted life. So this concept of rhythm is the most important discovery. The whole basis of a Hindu's life is dependent upon the understanding of this concept of rhythm. Rhythm means universal harmony. It has five important characteristics, which I will come shortly. This rhythm in later on turned into the concept of dharma. Cosmic point of view, it is called rhythm. From the individual point of view, it is called dharma. Now, all of us are integral part of this rhythm, the principle of rhythm. If we are not in harmony with this universal principle, then we become, or our life becomes anritha. Anritha means, as I said, untruthful. Untruthful means We will not be happy, we will be frustrated, we will have diseases at the physical level, disease at the mental level or intellectual level, disease at the spiritual level, and continuous rebirth, suffering. What Buddha used to call that life is full of suffering, this is what he meant, anritha. So our attempt to integrate, to live in harmony with this universal integration, this is the goal of life. And how to do it? The concept, how we can integrate ourselves with this universal harmony, is named by our Vedic seers as yajna. So, here is rhythm, here is dharma, and here is yajna. Three important concepts. But how to understand and put it into practice? For that, we need a special faculty, and that faculty is called dhi. Later on, it in a way degenerated into the popular idea of buddhi. By buddhi, usually in Hindu, by Hindus, it really means intelligence, intellectual understanding. That's not what dhi really means. Sri Ramakrishna clarifies the point for us. There are pandits, and they, pandits means they are scholars, they understand, they read the scriptures every day, and they think they understand. How beautifully Sri Ramakrishna brings out this concept through a small story. There was a king, he wanted to study Bhagavatam. He employed a Bhagavata pandit. Every day the pandit used to read out, explain Bhagavatam, and at the end of it, he would ask, "O king, have you understood?" And the king used to ask, "Have you understood?" So So this man was a sincere man. So he went back, studied it. Am I missing something? Then he came next day. And again, same thing happened. Several times this happened. And one day, the Bhagavata Pandit, he felt hurt. So he prayed to God, Lord, am I missing something? I know all the commentaries, sub-commentaries, the word meanings, everything. What does the king really mean? He's not a fool. He prayed to God. As a result of praying to God, suddenly the understanding has come. The dhi had awakened in him. And the Lord, in the form of the understanding, he conveyed the message, you fool, all along what have you understood? What is the essence of Bhagavatam? Human life is meant to love me and realize me. And here you are running after a king, trying to explain so that you can get some money or name and fame. The real meaning of Bhagavatam is that you should cultivate love for me. And if you love me, you will run away from the world and become a monk. And that's what he did. So he sent a note to the king, O king, now I understood. Now you can employ somebody else to teach you Bhagavatam. Every day morning, Hindus in the past, all the three upper castes used to go to a river bank or the seashore and they used to utter a famous mantra. You know what is it? Gayatri Mantra. And what is the meaning of the Gayatri Mantra? There is a special meaning which I will come later on. But briefly what it means is, O Lord, awaken thee in me. Dhiyo yo naha prachodayat. Let me have that faculty to understand life. Then what happens when I understand, when my dhi awakens? Two things happen. One, my understanding becomes perfect. But many of us have understanding. Unfortunately, we do not have that desire to put it into practice. The second thing that happens is, that we have a strong desire to put these things into practice. First to understand, second to practice. That is how we know a person is really an intelligent person or not. Otherwise, all pandits, they understand, even intellectually, they understand many things rightly. But unfortunately, they do not feel like practicing it. So, these are the four concepts. One, Ritam, second, Dharma, third, Yajna, and fourth, Dhi. Briefly, I will discuss these four concepts. About Ritam, the Vedic seers saw reality as an eternal, self-regulating, universal order or harmony, which is the foundation and essence of all that exists. And to the sages, this ultimate truth, and to live in tune with it is a true life. Not to live in tune with it is called anritam, falsehood, false life or vain life. I also told you that this has got certain characteristics. From this word ritam came the word rhythm and righteousness. Later on, it turned into, emphasis has been made into sat, satya, sat and satya. And this satya, it is important point to understand, sat means existence. Sat also means purity, holiness. Sri Ramakrishna says, cultivate the company of the holy. Sat sangha. Here sat means holiness. So this concept of rhythm has turned into three important ideas. It is satyam means truthfulness or truth. Second, satyam means it is good. Why is it good? Because if one lives in accordance with this truthfulness or rhythm or dharmam, then life becomes good for him. You know, Hindu's law of karma, it's why some people enjoy life, some people suffer. What is the simple explanation? Law of karma. What is law of karma? The person who enjoys, he had done some go to deed. He lived a life of satya, whereas the person who did the opposite, he suffered. Not to be in harmony with this universal concept of harmony is adharma. The second is goodness. The third is beauty. Now, beauty is intimately connected with both truth and goodness. Anything that is beautiful must be true, must be good. For example, if you see something in a cinema which is very beautiful, you won't give it any value. You only give the value of entertainment. Do you follow me? What I'm trying to say? You see something very beautiful, it has an entertainment value only. However beautiful it is, it doesn't give you any lasting joy. But anything that is real, true means real. But even though it is real, it must be good. If it is not good, it is not beautiful at all. Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. Truth, goodness and beauty. In that order. This is what later on this concept of rhythm had expanded into. Then dharma. What is dharma? Individual attempt to live in harmony with the universal harmony, with the concept of rhythm, that is called dharma. This dharma later on was expanded into the law of karma. The third concept was yajna. The concept of yajna is how to integrate our life with the universal, with the real. That is called yajna. That yajna of the Vedic times has gradually turned into what we call puja. Part of this yajna was called vidya, contemplation. So to give you an example, madhu vidya, dahara vidya, panchagni vidya. So there are several types of contemplations which go along with the rituals of yajna. If yajna turned into puja, then vidya or upasana turned into modern manasika puja, mental worship. And that's what retired people, vanaprastha people are supposed to do. And lastly, the attempt to awaken true understanding seriously turned into what we call in later on in modern times at meditation. Nowadays the word meditation has become very popular. What is the purpose of meditation? It's a very interesting concept. Especially in the 1960s, there was one Maharshi Mahesh Yogi who popularized this idea of meditation. And nowadays everybody talks about meditation. Few people understand what is the meaning of meditation. What is the real purpose of meditation? To awaken the dhi. What our ancient Vedic seers used to do early morning, to pray to the Gayatri, symbolizing the inner awakening. That turned out into modern concept of meditation or upasana. The devotees who have taken initiation from the Ramakrishna order, usually they will be given a booklet. What is it called? Upasana, a way of contemplation. In this, one's own chosen deity, the ancient Gayatri, has become now the modern chosen deity. Formerly it was the sun. Now it is the, either it could be Ramakrishna, it could be Krishna, it could be Devi, it could be Rama, it could be anybody. And every god or goddess has his or her own Gayatri mantra. Coming back to our brief distinctions, that this Rita means it is an integrity. It turned into Satyam, Shivam and Sundaram. So as I mentioned, this rhythm has five parts. What are the five parts? The first part is, rhythm is self-regulating. Means there is no force from outside, but it is there within, from within. Universal means it occupies the whole universe, the living as well as the non-living. Just to give an example, the scientists tell us that if this earth, you know, this earth is elliptical, it's not round, it is slightly oval shaped. If it had not been exactly in the shape it is now, but 100th degree, if it changes its position, life on earth becomes extinct. This is what scientists tell us. Now, who is there to explain why exactly it is like that? And it never changes its position. There is some self-regulating mechanism is there. So this idea has been given in the Upanishads, especially in the Taittiriya Upanishad and also Kathopanishad. It is there. Bhishasmat vatah pavate bhishodeti suryaha bhishasmat agnischa indrascha mrityur dhavati panchamam. Out of fear of this, the sun rises and sets, and out of fear of this, Agni and Indra do their respective duties, and Mrityu, the deity of death, promptly reclaims lives whose time on earth has run out. Meaning that the whole universe has a self-regulating, self-balancing capacity, and that is done by whom? There is a principle of rhythm. Something is inside. To give you another example, whenever we go out of balance, then immediately there is a mechanism which automatically tries to take out. Is it right? You are walking, you're about to slip. What do? You try to regain your balance. Who is telling you to do that? We are born with it. Even a tottering newborn calf, it slips. But there is a self-regulating mechanism which tries to make it stand properly. Or if you are riding a bicycle, what do? Constantly you are trying to maintain a balance. When you are driving a car, what are you doing? There is a balance. There is something within. You are eating food. Something within says, I am still hungry, it's not enough. And you eat more. Something says, you have overeaten. Be careful. If you are hungry, that's the self-regulating mechanism says the body needs fuel. If you are tired, the self-regulating mechanism says. It is all within body, whether it is a small baby, as with a red man about to die, it's a self-regulating mechanism. Just as life has a self-regulating mechanism, death also, there is something which it tells, look, it is better for you to die. We do not wish to die, but there is a self-regulating mechanism which says if you do not die at the right time, then who will suffer? You will suffer. It is self-regulating. It is harmonious. This is a most wonderful concept which I briefly mentioned in my last class, that everything in this universe is in perfect harmony with everything else. Within human body, there is a symbiotic relationship between certain bacteria and our life forces. So the bacteria helps you to live, and as a payment, it also takes something. Without them, we will not be able to survive. Everything has a harmony with everything else. Well, that is the third one. Everything has got interconnectedness. No part is redundant. Everything has its own role and place. That is called holistic attitude. Everything has a meaning. This is the hardest part for us to understand. Yes, when I am very happy, I can understand it as a meaning. But when I am suffering, what is the meaning? When I am sick, what is the meaning? Try to find out. What is the meaning? I am having a headache. Why is it this headache? What does it tell us? What does it tell? It tells something has gone wrong. I am living a life of anrita, false life. Correct yourself. If you do not correct, then who will suffer? What is the most wonderful thing is, I said it is self-regulating mechanism. So what happens is, if we do not correct ourselves, it will correct us. And until we become all right, it is not going to leave us. This is a concept which has turned into what is modern Indian philosophy, concept of Maya. What is Maya? The self-regulating mechanism. You lead a good life, then you will go to God, back to God. You do not lead, I will take you to God. But I will drag you to God by your ears. By your ears. Who does that? Guru does that. That is why he is called Karnadhar. That is what nature does for us. If we do it ourselves, then it's fine. If we do not, then nature does it. That is why this beautiful concept, Holy Mother used to say, you know, my child, everybody will get food. Nobody will go starving. But some people will get food only at midnight. What a profound statement. Everybody will go to God. Nobody will be left out. This is Vedanta's very special philosophy. Then, are there no sinners? Yes, there are sinners. And who is a sinner? An adharmic fellow is a sinner. Unrighteous fellow is a sinner. And who is an unrighteous fellow? He who doesn't live in harmony with the universal rhythm. He is adharmic. But he will not be left out. Nature, life is a mighty stream. It will not allow anyone to just to be left behind. It will carry everyone. But if you don't go along with the stream consciously, then on the way, you will be smashed against rocks. You will be pulled through thorny bushes. You will suffer a lot, badly bruised. Ultimately, you will reach the ocean. Because no one will be left behind. This is a most beautiful concept. Arising from this, there is a self-regulating mechanism. So, these are the five concepts. Self-regulating, universal, harmonious, interconnected and meaningful. When Swami Vivekananda said, each soul is potentially divine. That's what he meant. What is potential divinity? There is a divinity is within us. It will not allow you to just live as you like. Yes, it will give you some choice, but even that choice also is fraught with suffering. How to live in integration with this concept of rhythm? From the cosmic point of view, there is a harmony, an interconnectedness, a meaningfulness in this whole universe. From the individual point of view, we have to consciously live in harmony with that concept. And this attempt to live in harmony with the universal has come to be known as dharma. The word dharma in Sanskrit has a very beautiful connotation. What is dharma? That which upholds a thing is called dharma. What is the meaning of upholding? A human being has humanness. A cow has cowness. A book has bookness. A humanness, cowness, bookness. That is the dharma of that particular object. And there is no way we can deviate. You see, you can dress a person like a bear. Will he become a bear? You can dress a book in the shape of a table. Will it become a table? It can never lose. If it loses its essence, it will become non-existent. That is the first concept is everything has its own special essence which makes that object that unique object. Now to protect that uniqueness is called observing dharma in practice. Let us take human beings. Every human being has his own dharma, humanness. So what is this humanness? It is only Western concept. But according to Swamiji, every human being has what? Potential divinity. So first attempt should be, he should be a human being. And second attempt, he should be a spiritual being. So what is dharma? To be a human being, to be a spiritual being, try one's level best with all one's time, energy and intelligence. That is called observance of dharma. So what happens? Dharmo rakshati rakshitaha. When dharma is protected, dharma protects that person.
it gives good result. Then what happens? The result would be life becomes ritam satyam. Life becomes holy. Life becomes good. Life becomes beautiful. Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. We have to be dharmic. Dharma means, I will deal with this special subject called dharma in my future class. How many types and how we can be dharmic, that is a special subject by itself. But here I am briefly telling, individual attempt to live in harmony with the universal, that is called dharma. Naturally, a child's dharma will be different. A grown-up person's dharma will be different. A doctor's dharma is different. A lawyer's dharma will be different. A soldier's dharma is different. And this concept has been explored by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita so beautifully. We'll come to that later now. So how to practice dharma? And that attempt to practice dharma in individual life is called yajna. Yajna. What is this idea of yajna? Yajna means how to put dharma into practice. Practical dharma is called yajna. Now, there are two types of yajnas. You know, you hear the word yajna. Vedic rishis used to perform yajna. So all that picture that comes to your mind is, they will be lighting a fire and wasting a lot of clarified butter and other things into the fire. Even now you see many people doing it. But the concept of yajna is, every second we are performing yajna. The whole universe is doing yajna. The Lord himself in the form of the universe is performing yajna. So there are two types of yajnas. The divine and the human. So what is divine yajna? What is divine yajna? That is the attempt to sustain, to keep up this rhythm, universal harmony, so that the universe will not fall into pieces and become non-existent. What the good Lord does is yajna, divine yajna. How does he do it? Do you see the Lord sitting somewhere and lighting up some fire and offering something? Every day the sun rises and the sun sets. What is it? The wind is constantly moving. The clouds are pouring rains. The rivers are flowing all the time. The earth is being bountiful. All these are part of divine sacrifice. This is what I would like to speak in brief. The creation and maintenance of this whole universe, the constant rejuvenation of the earth through the rising and setting of the sun, the fall of rain, the flow of rivers, the blowing of wind, the growth of plants and animals, and all other countless ever recurring process of creation, maintenance and destruction going on all over the universe. All these are the result of the cosmic yajna of the divine. This divine yajna has three functions. Three functions. What are those three functions? Srishti, Sthiti and Laya. Creation, maintenance and dissolution. If the Lord takes leave for one day, what will happen to us? There is a beautiful story illustrating this point. Lord Shiva and Parvati were sitting on Mount Kailas, and Parvati was in a playful mood, and so she wanted to play a little bit with Shiva because there was nobody else to play with. So he was looking down beautiful earth. So she went behind him, put her hands behind his eyes and closed his eyes just for a moment and opened. Shiva became very grave, serious. Said, Devi, what have you done? Don't you understand that the whole life could have become extinct? Because what were the two eyes of Lord Shiva? The sun and the moon. One moment of the Shiva's time is 100 million years on the earth. So when she closed, the sun and the moon have taken a holiday, long, long holiday. What would have happened? The whole creation would have come to an end. That's when they say, as soon as she closed his eyes, a third eye had popped. He opened the third eye and light, air, fire, heat, everything as usual, the world went on. In the form of the story, the mythology is trying to tell us that this divine yajna, this whole creation, maintenance, and dissolution, these are all part of the divine yajna. This concept that the Lord is sacrificing, is making this yajna to maintain this universal life, rhythm. This was beautifully depicted in the Purusha Sukta. The Purusha sacrificed himself. It is not a one-off act. Yes, he did that at one time. After that, God took rest. For seventh day, he took rest. There is a legend, you know, some of the Bible versions are there. 6 days he worked hard, seventh day he took rest. The Lord takes rest for one day. What do you think is going to happen to you and me? So this divine yajna, constantly the Lord is doing this for us. And not only he is doing it in the form of nature, he is doing it in the form of trying to awaken people. One of these concepts is called avatara. Why does the incarnation occur? Why does the Lord incarnate himself? What for does he incarnate? Do you know what the Gita says about it? Hindus must know. You have been attending these classes for, you know, years and years and years. When does the Lord incarnate? Whenever there is an upset of dharma is lacking. Vice prevails and virtue declines. Means when dharma goes down, the only purpose is dharma samsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge, for the establishment of dharma. What is dharma? How human beings should regulate themselves in order to live a proper life. And for that God himself descends. What is it? From the state of God, he enters into the human life. It is the worst type of degradation in life. And yet he does it happily, voluntarily. That is why Swami Vivekananda had hymned Sri Ramakrishna as Prana Arpana Jagatatarana. One who had offered his life. When did he offer his life? From which year to which year? Not from which year to which year. His whole life, from the time of his decision to come into this human life until the time he passed away. When did he pass away? Say for example, Sri Ramakrishna. When did he pass away? Where did he pass? From this room to the other room. He is still there in his subtle body. And he is still there helping all of us. If he doesn't maintain this balance, this earth would have been extinguished long, long back. Prana arpana jagatatarana. About Jesus Christ it is said, God himself sent his own son as sacrifice for the sins of this world. It's a cryptic statement. But what it really means is, that this Jesus Christ, who was Jesus Christ? God himself, in the form of Jesus. He had sacrificed his life, and he is still sacrificing his life. What did he say? Wherever there are two people gathered in my name, I am there. Still he is doing it. He will do it in the future. This is one concept. Also, what did we say? Divine yajna, it progresses into three phases. Never-ending cycle, Srishti, Sthiti, Laya. Creation, maintenance, dissolution. And this is not one-off act. There will be creation, there will be maintenance, there will be dissolution. This is called Brahma Chakra, the wheel of the universe. Constantly it is going on. So what is death? Beginning of life. What is life? Beginning of death. So be careful about celebrating your birthday. I am 40 years old. 40 years old means you are nearer to death. 40 years. But you go a little beyond and say, I am 40 years nearer to a new life. Don't you ever forget. The result is that this creation, maintenance is going. Pralaya or dissolution is also part of this divine yajna. Then, what is human yajna? What can a human being do? As I said, what is yajna? The attempt to live in harmony with this universe, that is called dharma. And dharma in practice is called yajna. So, if a man wants to attain harmony and peace, he too must imitate the divine and convert his whole life into a sacrifice to a yajna. You know, Swami Vivekananda, one day, after his return from America, he promised, "I will send one of my brother disciples. I only preached," he was very modest, "I only preached, but I will send you one who has really realized and practicing those principles in life." So he asked Swami Turiyananda, "Hari Bhai, you must go to America." He said, "No." Then Swamiji scolded him, said, "No, what to do?" Swamiji was a wonderful actor, you know. He fell on the shoulder of Swami Turiyananda, started sobbing, said, "Hari Bhai, I am shedding my blood drop by drop. Would you all just go on seeing and will not try to lift to help me, a hand to help me?" If Swami, a person like Swami Vivekananda, who returned from America, starts sobbing like that, who can resist it? This is what I call Brahmastra. Nobody can resist it. Even God cannot resist. What does Sri Ramakrishna say? "Weep for 3 days and he will come running." Weeping is the last resort. Hari Maharaj immediately had to accept it. What was Swamiji doing? Was he simply telling? Did he not shed his blood drop by drop? But he did not take it in a negative way. He did it joyfully. He did not do it involuntarily. Sri Ramakrishna asked him, you know that beautiful vision? He went into Saptarishi Mandala, where the 7 sages were sitting, and he lovingly, Sri Ramakrishna put his hands round the neck of one of the rishis and said, "I am going down. You must come with me." And the rishi consented by his just look, and then a ray of light came down. So he did not do it involuntarily, forced way. He had to come down from that state of highest state. He had to come down. But why did he come down? Because it is a joy. It's what I will discuss now, that this giving up this wonderful state in order to help other people, converting one's own life into a whole yajna. Whole life is a yajna, a sacrifice, not in the English sense, in the Indian sense. It is a joyous participation in the divine sacrifice, universal sacrifice, Vishwayajna. And that is what Sri Ramakrishna did, what Christ did, that's what Buddha did, that's what Swami Vivekananda did, that's what all of us are doing. So, if a man wants to attain harmony and peace, if he wants to develop his potential divinity and attain supreme peace, then he has to do it, yajna. Yajna is a two-way process, of which giving is only one part, receiving being the other. Why? We can only give what we receive. And without receiving anything, what will we give? In Bengali, this beautiful concept has been put so beautifully. Ganga jale Ganga puja. Means you want to worship Mother Ganga. What will you do? Take a little water from her. And a small child wants to feed its mother. What will it do? It will take a tiny bit of food from its cup and put it into the mouth of the mother. Who gave the child that tiny cup of food? It is the mother only. So this is the, God gives us and we have to give back. The Vedic idea of yajna may be described as participation in the living drama of the cosmos. The essential point in participation is non-retention, not holding back. Life gives us food, air, energy, ideas, knowledge, love, rest, joy, life itself. It is an unceasing flow which can only be maintained by giving back to it what is taken out of it. So what is the concept of yajna? Whatever we receive, we should give back. So what is the first part of this? We have to receive. And how can we receive? By giving back. You see, you take, mother gives you food and she wants to give you second time. How will you receive second time? You must digest whatever you have already received. Not only that. You know what happens? When you eat food, two things happen after you eat food. You know what happens? First thing is you digest part of the food and absorb it and it becomes you. Right? What is the second part? Something goes out. Is it not? That going out is not merely what we only have eaten. Some part of ourselves also is added to it and goes out. So now you see, how does a plant grow? You add manure. What is manure? What is given out by the animals, plants, etc. The idea I am driving at is, the whole universe, this cycle, unending cycle is going on. We take, we receive. And if we don't give, what we receive? Death. You breathe in and don't breathe out. Then what happens? You know, every process of breath is pranagni. See, what the whole universe is in the form of plants is breathing out, which is called oxygen, we are breathing in. And what is it we are giving? Are we giving a little bit of oxygen? We are giving back carbon dioxide. But what is this carbon dioxide? It is oxygen for the others. So this continuous cycle is going on. And if anybody tries to retain it, that is called selfishness. Then what happens? Who will be the person harmed? That person will be harmed. How wonderfully it is there, you know, if there is a miser. And if he doesn't use his money properly, you know what happens? In a Sanskrit verse it says that either the rogues of his children will take it, waste it away, or the king in the form of taxes, VAT, will take away, or thieves will come and take it away. Many times it is seen that the people who do not voluntarily give, if what they legitimately they should give, this nature will come and hold the hand, and then it will be taken by forcefully. The result is very painful. In the process we suffer. So every individual must convert his life into a yajna. And that, how to convert that yajna, is the whole topic matter of Mahabharata, Ramayana, Dharma Shastras, Bhagavad Gita, etc., etc. So the Gita calls this process of taking something in and giving something out called chakra, yajna chakra. That is a special verse. And it says, evam pravartitam chakram nanuvartayati haya aghairindriyaramo mogham partha sajivati. One who does not participate in this Brahma chakra, by not converting his whole life into an act, a sacrificial act, such a person lives a vain life and he becomes unhappy. Suffering is his lot. So how can a person convert his life into a yajna? And that is where the scriptures give us steps how to do it. You have understood, life has to be converted into a sacrificial act. But it doesn't mean, again, do not take the English word. Sacrifice in English means suffering. No, it is not suffering. You retain what you need, and what you do not need, you give it back. This is the idea. So if the first step in converting our life into yajna is, we must become conscious. Now, many of us here, we are all devotees. So what do? We sit for meditation. And why is it that this meditation is not proving very beneficial? Why is it that even after 50 years we are the same persons? Why? Because the first condition of any meditation is later on, you know, this yajna converted itself into meditation in the form of Gayatri prayer and all that, is one must become self-aware. Whatever we want to do, we should not do unconsciously, we should do it consciously. What does it mean? It's a beautiful subject. Suppose a Hindu goes to a temple, and as an act of going to the temple, he has to give something to the temple. You know, a lot of devotees come here, there is a pranami box, and they drop a little bit of money there. Are they doing it with sleep? I wish they would do it, because instead of putting £1, at least they will put £5. They do it very consciously. That's not what is meant. What is meant? They are awake, but they have not really understood the significance of what, why they are giving. Then why are they giving? Because of tradition. Unconsciously they are following the process of, they have been drilled that whenever you go to a temple, you should give something. It is not a self-conscious act. Yes, he is awake, he is giving, he is doing it, but it is not a self-conscious act. So two conditions must be fulfilled if our life has to be converted into a yajna. First, it must be self-conscious. Second, it must be selfless. What is selflessness here? Selflessness means that I have nothing to give. I am only a medium, a pipe. Water is coming from God. It flows through a pipe. It enters into our kitchen. If the pipe says to us, be careful, you worship me, because it is I who is giving you water, then it would be, what would you do? You will break that pipe and bring another pipe. There is a very significant story in the Bhagavatam. Sri Krishna was at Gokula. So those people before, they used to worship Indra. Then Sri Krishna, once he said, why do you want to worship Indra? What big benefit he is conferring upon us? It is this hill which is giving the beautiful grass, and it is sustaining all the animals, us, fruits, flowers, and grass, and all these things, beautiful water. We should worship this. Who is this fellow called Indra, whom we have to worship? And of course, they were very afraid on one side. On the other side, they had tremendous faith in Krishna's words. So they said, okay, what you said seemed to be reasonable, let us worship. Then, you know, in the form of the legend, Indra became very angry. What? They stopped my worship. I will destroy them. And he poured and poured rains. You know, the idea is, the Lord lifted this Govardhanagiri with his little finger, and Indra could not do anything. What is the symbolism of this act? Symbolism is, Indra is only a pipe. Who is the real giver? The Lord himself is the real giver. So, you may wonder, instead of worshipping Indra, they only worshipped a hill. No. Sri Krishna gave them that dhee, understanding. It is the Lord who is within the hill who is giving you this. The idea is, connect everything with God. This was the great act that Hindus understood it. That is why a river is a goddess. A mountain is a goddess. A plant is goddess. You know, Tulasi, for example, etc. Every animal is connected with some god or goddess. A cow is goddess, Kamadhen. What is the idea? Idea is, it is not that the cow that we see externally is god or goddess. It is not the jackal which is the vahana. It is not the lion. It is that which is within, and which outside is but an expression of what is within. This beautiful Upanishadic principle or teaching is put into a practical term by deifying everything. Take another example, a concrete example. Here is Sri Ramakrishna's photo. We worship it. Whom are we worshipping? Are we worshipping the body of Ramakrishna? It is not there. Or what is there? A piece of paper, photographic paper, a wooden frame, a bit of light behind. Is it not? Is that what we are really worshipping? Whenever we worship that, we are remembering the divine Lord who manifested the most in that particular person's life some time back. So the historic person is only a symbol, but the eternal person is the real target of our worship. When Sri Krishna told these people, you worship the hill, he is not asking them to worship that particular piece of stone, maybe a little big, with plants and flowers. He is asking us if the real worship belongs to the divine Lord. Through this external manifestation, he is giving it. All of us must become aware of these two facts. The first, we must become self-conscious. What is self-consciousness? We must awaken to the fact that what we are giving, we are not giving. What we are receiving, we take whatever is necessary and give back what we do not really need. That is what Sri Ramakrishna told to Madhur Babu in a beautiful way, "You are not owner of this Jamindari. You are only a trustee." And today, to every rich person, this is what Sri Ramakrishna would say. And interestingly, when Swami Vivekananda was in USA, California, I think, somebody told Rockefeller, "Come and meet." So he was a great man. He's a great man. So Rockefeller came, stood. He was very proud. "I'm one of the richest persons." Swami Vivekananda did not even look up. After a long time, he looked up and he told him, "Look, all the money that you have doesn't belong to you. God has given to you. You enjoy your life, but become a trustee." Man said, "Who the hell are you to give me advice?" Got very angry and he went away. Of course, you know, when a person like Swami Vivekananda tells, it will never go in vain. You know why? Because Swami Vivekananda never told a lie in his life. So it is said, if a person observes truthfulness for 12 years, whatever he speaks, it will come true. If they say to some person, "Be generous," a miser will become generous. If such a person tells you, "A dead person, come back to life," he will come back to life. So Rockefeller didn't understand that. He went away. But you know, it was like an acid entered into it, started corroding. Corroding what? His haughtiness, his egotism, his miserliness. After a few days, he came hurriedly, without again any appointment. Just gate crashed into Swami Vivekananda's room. And he said, "I have made a trust. Thank me." Swami Vivekananda calmly looked up and said, "Thank me for giving you the suggestion." And today, there's a big Rockefeller Foundation is there. Millions of rupees. See, Bill Gates, he said that he would dedicate all his remaining wealth as a trust, trying to do some charity. Perhaps he understood that I'm a trustee, I must use this for a good purpose. There are people like that. So point is, it must be, if our lives have to convert themselves into a yajna, two points have got to be kept in mind. One, it must be a self-conscious act, in the sense we understand this is not mine, this belongs to God. So I am only an instrument I am giving. The second is, there must be no selfishness involved there. So what is the selfishness here? He must not crave, "I want name and fame, I want recognition, I want any other sort of, you know, joy or pleasure in this doing this." There must be only one sense. This is my puja to the Divine Lord. This is my worship to the Divine Lord. These are the two important steps if we have to convert our life into a yajna. So, in this yajnas, there are three steps. Because even though we would like to convert our life into a yajna, we cannot simply become Einsteins. There are three steps. And there are varieties of yajnas. These two concepts, Bhagavad Gita, in the fourth chapter, we get briefly to tell the first step in the process of converting our life into yajna is not to do anything wrong. The second step is to do everything that is right. The highest step is to realize that the Divine Lord is doing everything. All that I need to do is not to stand in His way, but to become a right instrument. How do we know? In the Gita, what was Arjuna's first reaction? "I will not do it." He learned his lesson. Okay, I will not take wrong decisions. The second step is, okay, I will do it. The highest step, then the Lord Himself told him, in the 11th chapter we get it, "Nimitta matram bhava savyasachin." I have done already what I decided to do. Everything is running according to my will. I sit in the hearts of all beings and move everything according to my will. Ishvara sarvabhutanam riddeshe arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarvabhutani yantrarudhani mayaya. So these three steps. In the fourth chapter of the Gita, we get briefly, there are dravya yajna, material offerings. This in two forms again. One is in the form of giving money and other things. Second form is of doing service. If you are educating an illiterate boy, if you are serving a patient, you may be poor, anybody can do it. But if you are having anything, and then you give it money, food, clothes, housing, whatever you can give. So one is materials, another is in the form of personal service. The second type of yajna is called mental, jnana yajna. I am talking to you about these beautiful concepts. Depending upon what attitude I have towards you, it can become a yajna. And you are listening. Depending upon what attitude you are having towards this action of listening, if you are doing consciously, you are doing selflessly, you are having the highest motive, then that becomes a jnana yajna. Gita jnana yajna, Upanishad jnana yajna, and Chinmaya Mission, that is the name they give. A teacher is giving jnana yajna. A doctor is also giving jnana yajna when he is treating a patient. So scientists are doing their jnana yajna. So many people are doing on a mental level. Anybody who is offering his or her services through the intellect in the right way, that is called jnana yajna. Then there is a spiritual yajna, the last step, which is a joyous participation, which the devotees call it leela. Yogins, karma yogins call it karma yoga. Jnana yogins call it atma yajna. Devotees call it leela. And yogis call it meditation. Meditation is a form of yajna. Service by the karma yogins is a form of yajna, highest form of yajna. Participating joyously in the world process is the bhakta's point of view of leela, yajna, and those who meditate. And Swami Vivekananda, lest you may understand, is my creation. Is not my creation. Swami Vivekananda said, higher than even the incarnations of God, there is one type of persons about whom the world knows nothing because they sit somewhere. What do? They just sit and meditate. What is their meditation? Is only one meditation. Sarve janaha sukhino bhavantu. Sarve santu niramayaha. May all beings be happy. May no one, no person, no being ever suffer. May this whole earth be filled with peace and bliss. From birth to death, from morning till evening, this is their one single, continuous, uninterrupted prayer. That is how a yogi participates in this universal yajna in his way. But without going through these steps, a person can never attain to that step. Briefly, we'll talk about this. And another important concept, dhi. How, what is dhi? How to awaken the dhi? How is Gayatri so important? And certain of the, there are so many vidyas in the Upanishads, but one sample vidya, I will talk to you, how profoundly it affected the modern, even the modern Hinduism. These points I will talk in my next class. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.